This is the easiest vote I'll make this year, and I haven't in the last 12 months. To me, it's very
welcome to the regular meeting of the Boxburg Planning Commission today, Tuesday, January 7th, 2025. Regular meetings of the Planning Commission are held here on the first Tuesday of each month at the Roger at 6:30 at the Roger E. Hedgepath Chambers, the Blacksburg Municipal Building. Citizens may address the Planning Commission during specified times on the agenda and are requested to adhere to the following. Please speak at the podium. Please state your name and address. Direct comments only to the commission. Please limit speaking time to a maximum of 3 minutes, and you'll have some help with the timer on the podium. And speak only once during a specific hearing or comment period. If necessary, a wireless microphone is available to anyone requesting the assistance. Please silence cell phones, show respect for all speakers, and allow all opinions to be expressed in a tolerant atmosphere. With that, we'll call this meeting to order. May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Britt.
Here.
Mr. Ehrman.
Here.
Mr. Ford.
Here.
Ms. Jones.
Here.
Mr. Kassoff.
Here.
Mr. Cassie.
Here.
Ms. Reinhart.
Here.
Ms. Walker is absent. We have a quorum.
Thank you. First item on our agenda tonight is our consent agenda. There's three items on the consent agenda. The first being the approval of the Planning Commission minutes for December 3rd, 2024. The proposed action is to approve. The second item on the consent agenda is CUP 24-4, which is a conditional use permit request to permit lighting at the public park or field at 2100 Toms Creek Road on behalf of the town of Blacksburg. The action there is to schedule a public hearing for February 4th, 2025. The third item is Ordinance 2070, which is an ordinance to amend Town Code Section 5701 of the subdivision ordinance pertaining to construction and design of sanitary sewer. The action there is to schedule a public hearing for February 4th, 2025. Do we have a motion on the consent agenda?
I move approval of the consent agenda.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Moving on, we'll move on to our first public hearing of the night, which is public hearing 801 North Main Street, PRD development at 801 North Main Street and additional locations on Cambridge Street, Progress Street, and Winston Avenue. Rezoning 24-2 rezoning requests from general commercial to an R5 transitional residential to PR planned residential to permit the construction of an 8-story multifamily building with commercial on the ground floor and townhome style family dwellings. Also included is the right-of-way, our ROW 24-2, which is a companion request to vacate a town-owned alley right-of-way of approximately 2,000 square feet. CUP 24-3 is an additional companion request to use an alley for access to 22 townhome style multifamily units. Before we get into our staff presentation, Commissioner Ehrman has a statement to read.
Yeah, I used to own a company that provided services to Niles Bolton, the architect of this project. I no longer own that company. I've run it by the town attorney, and he suggested that I explain that in the interest of full disclosure. I now own less than 1% of that company. And according to him, I'm not in violation of the Virginia of Conflict of Interest Act.
Thank you for that. Moving on, we have a staff presentation by Kinsey O'Shea.
Thank you. The three requests tonight will be presented in a single presentation, but will be acted upon separately by the Planning Commission. At the conclusion of applicant rebuttal, the Planning Commission will make a motion and take action first on the right-of-way vacation, then the rezoning request, and lastly, the conditional use permit request. The planned residential development proposal at 801 North Main Street contains a companion request to vacate approximately 2,000 square feet of a town-owned alley right-of-way. There is an additional companion request for a conditional use permit to use an alley to access non-single-family residential units. The first item we will be covering is the request to vacate approximately 2,000 square feet of an existing town-owned alley. There is an existing alley that runs parallel to Cambridge and Progress Streets and exits onto Main Street at a curb cut near the Speedway gas station. This is an aerial image showing the location of the alley. You can see that it is partially improved with pavement, but the entrance onto Main Street is gravel. In this image, you can see the gravel entrance in the center of the screen next to the retaining wall behind the Speedway gas station. The application exhibit shows the area to be vacated, which is approximately 2,000 square feet. The adjoining properties are subject to the rezoning request and therefore would not be affected by the vacation of the alley as a means of ingress or egress. The alley currently provides access to the rear of commercial properties along Cambridge Street, Winston Avenue, and Progress Street. There are no residential uses with access to the alley. However, these properties are subject to the rezoning request and will no longer be in commercial use if the rezoning request is approved. The alley does not provide access to any other parcels. It is separated from the Speedway gas station by a retaining wall. Next, we will review the conditional use permit to use an alley for non-single unit residential use. Zoning Ordinance Section 5719A states that alleys shall only be used for single unit residential and that any other use shall require a conditional use permit in all zoning districts. The proposal is to improve a portion of a paper unbuilt alley to access the townhome-style multifamily units. As proposed, the improved portion of the alley would dead-end at the property line and not continue behind the homes in the 900 blocks of Cambridge and Progress Streets. This is the location of the alley in the 900 block of between Cambridge and Progress Streets. You can see in this image that it is unbuilt or unimproved. There are no homes with access off the alley. As proposed, the alley would be improved with pavement and provide access to the townhome-style multifamily units and dead-end at the property line. It is not proposed to continue through the block. Finally, we will review the overall rezoning request. There are a number of properties involved in this rezoning request and a number of individual property owners. The applicant is LV Collective and is the contract purchaser of all of the properties. The total rezone area is approximately 2.8 acres, including the area of right-of-way to be vacated. Currently, there are a number of buildings with a mix of uses, including commercial and warehousing, as well as vacant buildings. The current zoning and future land use designations are split along Winston Avenue. The rezoning request area is shown in blue. This does include the area subject to the right-of-way vacation request. The development proposal entails the construction of several buildings, including one mixed-use commercial and multifamily building with structured parking, and several townhome-style multifamily buildings with surface parking. The development also includes a contribution to the town's affordable housing fund and a building energy efficiency performance proffer. This is the concept plan that was submitted with the application that shows the larger building with frontage along Main Street here on the right-hand side of the screen, with the proposed commercial area along Main Street. The darker area is the residential area behind, with structured parking below. This is Winston Avenue running along the left-hand side of the screen, with the townhome-style multifamily buildings shown in red. There is a wider sidewalk along Winston Avenue. There are entrances to the townhome parking here and here off of Progress Street, entrances to the parking garage here, here, and here for the commercial area. There is bicycle parking for townhomes provided in this area here and the commercial area along Main Street. The applicant did provide a rendering showing what the commercial area along Main Street would look like and a vision board that shows some of these, how this would feel expressed. Rezoning requests are evaluated for their conformity to the comprehensive plan, the relationship of the proposal to the general planning program of the town, and whether or not the change furthers the purpose of the zoning ordinance and the community, the need and the justification for the change, which is the applicant's burden to prove, and the effect of the proposed change on the surrounding neighborhood and public facilities. The comprehensive plan future land use designation is split between commercial and medium density residential. The comprehensive plan designation does not contemplate residential density, However, residential uses are allowed in the implementing zoning districts. The comprehensive plan future land use of medium density residential envisions 20 bedrooms per acre for multifamily uses. Even when evaluating only the proposed townhome style multifamily density on the medium density residential area, the proposed density of 77 bedrooms per acre exceeds that which was envisioned with the future land use designation for this area. There are a number of different points in the comprehensive plan to consider in evaluating this request. There is a concern over the loss of commercially developed land for residential development, as well as the need for services and commercial development will continue to grow with growing population. Similarly, there is a concern that there is not enough affordable housing in town to serve all of its residents' needs. Meanwhile, the site is located in an area designated as mixed use with student housing, consistent with the North Main Street study conducted by Development Strategies. Lastly, the 2019 Student Housing Policy guides council to consider student housing requests and evaluate opportunities for development and redevelopment of student housing in areas that are supportive of this type of development with regards to infrastructure and neighborhood compatibility. In the zoning ordinance, there is a statement of purpose for each district. The planned residential district allows flexibility for applicants to determine the best standards that meet the intent of the proposed development and district purpose. The intent of the district can be met in a number of ways. In exchange for flexibility, the application, plan, and proffers are binding. Any substantive changes would require the applicant to amend the PRD to go through the public hearing process. The zoning is split between general commercial and R5 transitional residential, consistent with a comprehensive plan. In the zoning ordinance, there are three types of regulations that govern new development. The planned residential district allows an applicant to propose most of the district standards, but use and design standards and development standards still apply unless modifications are specifically requested. District standards apply to all development within a particular zoning district. The existing and proposed standards are found on this table and in the staff report, with the general commercial zoning district being on the in this left-hand column, the R5 transitional residential in the middle column, and the proposed standards on the right-hand side. The applicant proposes a 0-foot setback on all sides. However, the building will be set back from the back of the sidewalk by a landscaped area. On all street frontages except Main Street, the applicant proposes a 5-foot minimum sidewalk. On Main Street, the sidewalk is wider and varies from approximately 15 to 22 feet. The proposed multifamily building will be 8 stories tall and vary between 82 and 94 feet tall. The proposed townhome-style multifamily buildings will be 3 stories tall and approximately 35 feet. Open space is required as both a district standard in the PR district and as a use and design standard for townhomes and multifamily. A minimum of 20% is required. The applicant is proposing several outdoor terrace spaces for residents as well as indoor spaces such as lounge and fitness areas to meet the 20% minimum requirement. Use and design standards govern the development of a particular use in any zoning district. The use and design standards for multifamily uses are intended to provide an attractive, street-oriented development with appropriate connections and open space. Most of the use and design standards for townhomes pertain to physical appearance and layout of the units. The intent is to provide a more single-family appearance than that of a larger monolithic multifamily building. While technically not townhomes, the proposed townhome-style multifamily buildings meet the definition of multifamily dwellings, but for the sake of development, they are referred to as townhomes and as what they are intended to resemble aesthetically. Townhomes are not to be stacked vertically, but as proposed, there will be one unit on the ground floor and a two-story unit above, with the whole three-story facade resembling a single townhome unit. This is the view of the multifamily building from Progress Street, and you can see the building articulation and change of materials and color to break up the facade of the structure. In this image of the townhome style units, you can see that they appear to be three-story units arranged side by side and retain a more individual unit appearance than the multifamily building does. The standard of 1.1 parking spaces per bedroom accommodates a resident plus guest parking and is typical of student apartment living where unrelated individuals occupy bedrooms. The planned residential district does allow an applicant to propose an alternate standard. The applicant's justification includes proximity to campus and downtown and an adjacent bus stop on North Main Street. The applicant is proposing double the minimum parking for bicycles. There will be a bike room on the ground floor of the multifamily building that holds at least 358 bikes. Additional bike parking is provided outdoors near the townhomes, and some of this parking is covered. Landscaping is required per the zoning ordinance. The minimum tree canopy should be as per similar uses, which in this case would be multifamily uses, and requires a minimum of 10% canopy coverage. Street trees are required to be provided along all public street frontages. In this case, the applicant has proposed to include all street trees on all frontages except Cabert Street. The total minimum number of street trees are provided along all of the other street frontages. Signage should be evaluated for its appropriateness to the development and the surrounding area. The applicant has proposed a signage plan as part of the application. This slide shows several excerpts from the signage plan showing several different types and sizes of the proposed signage. Development standards require that sidewalks meeting code mustn't be installed where they do not exist today. Although there is existing sidewalk on some of the street frontages today, none of it has the required 4-foot vegetative strip. The zoning ordinance requires that the applicant construct new sidewalk with the vegetative strip or request a modification to this standard. The applicant has requested a modification to not require the 4-foot vegetative strip and instead install the 5-foot sidewalk immediately against the back of the curb along the street frontages within the development. The plan does show that there will be a variable width landscape area between the building and the sidewalk. This configuration may be more appropriate to an urban setting as proposed. The stormwater concept plan has been approved. The town public water and sanitary sewers serve the site and are adequate to support the development. There are two modifications that are required. One is to allow more than 1 yard of a townhome to be improved with a driveway or parking, and the second is to allow the construction of the sidewalk without a 4-foot vegetative strip. The proffer statement includes proffers for substantial conformance, maximum building height, a parking policy for residents, occupancy restrictions, a proffer for the proposed signage, building sustainability in the form of an energy efficiency performance, and lastly, a contribution to the town's affordable housing fund. At this point, I will take questions for staff.
Please. Please forgive me. I feel like I should know this, but I'm not 100% sure. If this were rezoned to a PRD and it was never built as that PRD, could someone build by right to the underlying zoning, they would have to rezone back to?
That's correct. Once this is rezoned, the zoning does travel with the land forever.
Right, okay. And so even what's there now would be
gone.
A by right.
That's
use.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Additional questions for Kinsey?
I was a little unclear at the last discussion what we knew about the Affordable Housing Trust Fund. Can you briefly explain how that would work?
The town has an Affordable Housing Trust Fund which accepts money to be able to develop new affordable houses in town. This is the first time that we will have received a cash proffer for this fund, but it has been established in order to be able to receive cash proffers from development.
Could the town use it in various ways, and by way of grants and seed money for other projects?
I believe so, yes. We can provide you a better answer for that.
Kinsey, it's a good answer, but could we get Matt up here to discuss
it? Absolutely.
Could you give us a little bit more in-depth answer to?
Absolutely. Just to elaborate on Kinsey's response, one of the things that the housing staff will be working on in 2025 is actually setting up some policy recommendations for town council's consideration in terms of the exact parameters of what we would use the fund for. But generally, it would be for low to moderate income persons, housing in our community. It could go into the home trust, it could be for rental housing, or anywhere in between. So basically, affordable housing options in our community. Generally, what we've talked about is for incomes at or below 120% area median income is the range that and below that we'd want to cover with this fund. Federal funds are capped at 80%. So this would give us a little bit more flexibility for projects. So that is the general intent. And as Kinsey mentioned, council created the fund a couple years ago. Our ARPA funds went in there. They put $4 million of seed money from ARPA in there that we had an application process to allocate those funds to three projects. So it would be something similar for other funds in it. And the other conversation is, how do we set up some type of reoccurring to put money into it as a community as well? So those are conversations that'll happen this calendar year with council for kind of the policy pieces, but that's the general gist of where we're headed with it, if that's helpful context.
That's a satisfactory answer. Good. Thank you, Matt.
You're welcome. Appreciate that.
Any additional questions for staff at this point? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to the applicant presentation. John Neal of Foresight Design Services.
Yes, please. Christopher Johnson, 20262 LaPorte Meadows Drive, Frankfort, Illinois, 60423. Just forgot that one. Mm-hmm. Just briefly before I start, the last work session, we took a moment to go back and deliver some information that was engineered and designed outside of the Plan Commission and the public's view. Both in the neighborhood meeting and in one of the Plan Commission meetings, there was a request to understand. So we have a lot of the same slides. I will move through them very quickly, but I did want them there for reference as it pertained to the project. We're talking about 801 North Main Street today. We're looking at the downtown Blacksburg strategy that locates this particular area as ideal location for student housing. It also, why is it ideal location? It's close to similar uses, it's walkable, and therefore promotes alternative transportation and pedestrian activity to Virginia Tech, the main destination of the tenants. Why is it a problematic development? Because it is in a localized floodplain. Currently, the subject properties are largely sitting vacant, but there is some commercial use. It has a negative impact on quality of life in the area, and flooding issues are preventing any development from being built. You can see by the map and some future maps how many different parcels this flooding problem actually causes for future development. Some existing photos of the current state of the parcels and the structures on them. And this is a little bit more of the timeline. And the reason for including this is to help everyone understand this has been under development for over a year. Some of this has been done at the request and at the request of staff and agreement of the applicant to make sure that certain things were accounted for before becoming a formal application, like the traffic and the flood stormwater improvements. This is a very early understanding back in January of last year. It shows a much smaller project. It shows a single collection of parcels to the south side. It does not involve everything, and you can see that you'll see on the later application today. And we had a number of different comments from the people we've talked to, both decision makers and town staff, to observe the ongoing public discussion of height, consider the height against the neighbors on Winston, continue to think about the retail, note the existing proximate parking of close developments, pedestrian path to the university, and we agreed to work on the town to ensure traffic and stormwater engineering are addressed prior to submitting the application. Flash forward to a little bit later in the year, around end of February through April, we had all of those same things to come back and report to the staff and decision makers, and we did at that time agree that we would address the stormwater and traffic prior to formal application. What you'll see now is a much more developed project. The project includes a little greater area. It's a lesser overall density because of that area. And the discussions about the stormwater became more enlightened and really much more focused. What we took away from this, basically all of the things that were asked were replied to, and it was acknowledged and appreciated that we were taking the time on this greater scope prior to the submission. There's a lot of additional detail that had come out of that meeting that we're happy to address in the Q&A period. Flash forward to, it's really April through September. These 5 months, it took us engineering and designing to make sure we had something acceptable for the city to allow us to come forward with the application. A lot of time and effort and investment went into that. This shows after about 3 months, we had enough done in the engineering that the town of Blacksburg published an agreement to the partnership goals and milestones associated with the stormwater. August and September, we moved a little bit forward, and by the early September months, we have had the TIA accepted, and we were able to provide the application formally to the town. This is a little example of some of that work. This page has evolved a little since our last meeting. What you can see is the September design of the storm capture and the updated December design of the storm capture. And you can see how some of these pieces have grown to accommodate even greater stormwater. You can, and this is in the capture on the left, the upper right and middle right show the release side and how some of those pieces have grown to allow a better control downstream. And what you'll see on the bottom row is the evolution of how the design and working with town staff had grown and really did whatever we could to try to accommodate the town's needs. Moving forward to the Plan Commission work session. This was the same project with greater refinement. You can see we needed to confirm open space, illustrate stormwater and infrastructure scope, finalize affordable proffer, and discuss sustainable proffer. Similar project, we've done a little more massaging of the exterior, creating greater setbacks. As you can see on the bottom profile, we've taken a very large setback off of Main Street and created an outdoor plaza with a double height frontage, which really diminished the pedestrian point of view of the building. And we've also tried to diminish the kind of stark nature of the taller side of the building by the three-story townhomes, creating a buffer between the larger development and the single-story residential, and really creating a double-sided streetscape improvement. This is a quick understanding of this time we've spoken about and how those profiles of the building going from Main Street back to Winston had evolved. And you can see they're much the lowest example, they're much lower at the extremes and higher in the middle. As we go on to plan work session two, this is really needed to do a better job with the open space, better illustrate the infrastructure investment as a resiliency of a community benefit, and finalize affordable proffer, as well as formally propose the sustainable proffer. This was some of our design and layout about where, how and where we would address the street frontage and how we would address the open space concerns and calculations. And this did include the development of a much more lush buffer between the townhomes and the single family residential between Progress and Winston. This is a couple of illustrative renderings kind of looking at all different sides of the project. One from Main Street in the upper left, Progress in Main in the upper right, a front-on view of the townhomes in the lower left, and a streetscape view between the two buildings in the lower right. It's a quick study and map of the open space, and again, a little more illustrative view and illustrations of inspiration images for these outdoor designs. Then jumping over to the project evolution, this is the scope that our team was modeling on. You can see it goes a considerable amount of downstream study and really focused on the upstream study at Progress in Main. The lower graphic shows the size and the extent of the improvement and how it cuts all the way between those two sites in the city block. A couple of other illustrations, hard to see, but in the upper right, very computerized and a little cartoony. The final design really opened up to a 22-foot by 17-foot tall, as opposed to what's there now, to 5 or 6 foot round diameter pipes with observation platform and the ability to bring full vehicles down there and maintain in case of stormwater emergencies. This is the most interesting site, I think, to me. The light blue indicates where stormwater is measured and existing currently, 10-year on the left and 100-year on the right. The dark blue shows the revision of that stormwater impact with this added storm sewer system. This is just a little blurb really about what goes into this. It's a $3 million, probably a little more now, investment into the town infrastructure, 400 linear feet of aging pipes, undersized, flow area increased by 400%, half of which has been daylighted, reduction to the impact of the 10 and 100-year storm, replacement of deteriorating infrastructure, and really follows the Town of Blacksburg Resiliency Plan, which calls for people addressing the infrastructure in this way to potentially offer incentives for land and property owners. This was a study showing really the types of uses that were in this area. Bright red is larger multifamily. Orange is the rental, single-family rental properties that have owners that are not actually living there. And blue are the single-family homes that are occupied by those owners. And just quick note, the largest factor affecting housing market affordability, which is part of what we're talking about here, is constrained supply. So if you can't build on this site, you can't add supply here. And being able to add this supply also has a similar and relative area of migration between tenants at similar and dissimilar economic demographics. Several different points to that end, but I will go past these to illustrate how we established our proffer for affordable housing, which is about three times what it was in our original offer with working back and forth with town staff. We will skip through the details associated with U.S. Ecologic, the energy use intensity and the examples of our experience across the nation on the type of densities that are associated with the developments that we've seen. And those numbers on the right in the black highlight would give a little more indication about densities that you're seeing in other university towns. One quick mention about density. We've taken a look at all the developments within Blacksburg that had higher numbers of student-specific housing. We've looked at those densities. If you were to take the at-grade parking and make those into structured parking, similar to the way we're doing that, and what you're seeing is the densities really begin to align. Our density with 269 beds per acre, if you're doing that with the rest of these, you see 255 beds, you see 199 beds. Backing that up again, 224, 212. So the difference is really how we're addressing the parking and how that affects both the height and the intensity of land use. What we did here was reverse engineer that. We took the parking, we took the areas associated with it, and by breaking it down, we're really looking at closer to 6.62 acres if it were built in the same way as the other student developments in town. And that, if done in that fashion, it would equate to about 115 beds per acre. Now we're into the plan session two. So there's some things here that are fairly detailed that I will skip for time's sake, but it has to do with an old paradigm and a new paradigm of parking and how people are looking at that in terms of smart growth versus the parking servicing the city. Universal trends in parking typically suggest an implemented strategy to reduce single occupant vehicles and create walkable areas, provide relief from auto congestion, pollution, public realm improvement. That's part of the reason we're looking to look at a 0.5 reduction. In our practices, about a 20% reduction per car share. If you're doing that on site, you're providing cars that multiple tenants can use. Preferred parking requirements relief on provision of multimodal transit passes, meaning offering your tenants transit passes would also refer to a reduction in relief from parking requirements based on proximity to transit stops or centers like MMTF, are a 10-minute walk or less from our site and a single transit ride. There's a number of different market studies that I will spare you at this time, but happy to go back and visit. The local connectivity, most of you know, but in general, the majority of goods and services are all within walking distance or quick transit. New ADA compliant dwelling units have accessible route to new transit structure within 35 feet of our front door. 9 additional routes are available to cross Christiansburg and Blacksburg with within 10-minute walk or within a single transit stop to the MMTF. And Blacksburg Transit, as you may or may not know, has been named one of the top 10 best small transit systems in North America. That is more regional here. I'm sure you guys are familiar with it, so it does have another number of student discounts, but really what I wanted to address here is how this has a little more market view. Why do we think this is achievable? We're looking at the understanding of how things get parked here. We do see that some of the more distant developments have that 0.71. They're full with a wait list. The Union is a 0.65. They have a full reserved, but the rest of it has a little bit of flex. Some of the ones closer, like the Edge and the Haven, are not quite as full. They have, the report is that they're being underutilized, and with the fall Virginia Tech, another, I think, portion to look at here, as this fall of 2023, the Virginia Tech population at 30,000 includes 10,700 out-of-state students, 3,500 international students, and a very high number of parental drop-offs of student versus personal vehicles. So we would see that nearly 50% of that population could consider a car an added cost. The way we would approach this is we would look at leasing incentives, and I know this was a concern for this group especially. So these are all under consideration. None of them are formal, but we did have kind of a meeting of the minds with our operations and management team. Transportation credits are one thing we've done in multiple locations. Complimentary transit passes assumed for a limited number of years to establish a pattern of use. Complimentary VT carpool passes that would go to, let's say, a 4-bedroom with a single car. You would give them preferred parking. You would pay for their carpool pass, and they could park very close to the elevator cores. This would be an incentive for leaving more single vehicle autos at home and not bringing them to Blacksburg. We've discussed the beginning and end of semester shuttles from major airports, Amtrak destinations, Roanoke, Charlotte, et cetera. Complimentary rideshare passes, Uber, Lyft, et cetera, non-person vehicle leases. And on-site car shares, Turo car rentals apps, that's one that we used with our tenants in a number of different markets, residential networking apps, carpool apps, regional attraction apps. Overflow parking accommodations are under study, but general cost would show that someone who came and could not get a parking spot at our place but still wanted to bring a car would find savings at an accommodation like the Perry Street Garage. The resident networking apps and carpool apps and, and then further interviews would be conducted before final selection with potential leasable parking stalls in Blacksburg. This is how we would communicate that, because the question is, do they know before they come that there is not a parking stall available? And how do we keep them from coming, students from coming and showing up with vehicles when we know we don't have parking to accommodate it? So we've, in multiple different markets, we've utilized on our own development website certain language that alerts the people that are looking into it, whether it be a parent, whether it be a student, that this is a condition that they'll have to understand. We've done, and over on the right here in the blue, you've got a list of different parking publications that we've given out at our other developments. And you can see by the right, none of them are that big, but they've had multiple views. So this is a very effective way of communicating things like that. We've also utilized more student-centric forms of digital communication, TikToks. We actually have a podcast, which is a peer-to-peer interview, where we have someone closer to the student age interviewing other students. They get to talk about how their experience was at their university. And it's really become quite popular. We also utilize blogs and utilize online parent groups, which may not be something that everybody's picking up on, but Facebook groups and Reddit really give quite an insight to a lot of the parental oversight that is going into finding your student a place to live. High level, response to observing parking globally. Reduction of parking has tangible, sustainable benefits and community benefits. Response to observing parking locally is making informed management decisions and utilizing incentives to accomplish parking reduction goals. How we educate and track with our tenants, we illustrate the cost of comparisons, we have a form of local connectivity, we have multiple fronts of peer-to-peer content, we're engaging the parents of incoming students and informing via published parking guides similar to active campuses where LV is present. And how we incentivize and influence, we offer discounts with associated with the absence of single occupant vehicles, offer transit credits, above student discounts, and offer off-site long-term storage options through local partnerships, lease agreements. There was also a question that I wanted to make sure that everybody on this panel understood that we were listening at, which is in regard to setbacks and step backs. Very important to us, if it's important to you, it's important to us. And what we noticed is, you know, this is from a little bit earlier, we do feel like we're achieving at least an improvement over the discussion that's going on regarding height in the downtown area. Noticing we're adjacent but not included in that, the red line talks about what's been discussed, and the dark blue is where the actual building is in that envelope, in that zoning envelope. We are currently studying Cambridge Street because, as it was noted, there are not street trees. That is largely the service side of the building, and it is not as wide at the base. So we are looking at rearranging parking. We're looking at redesigning some units to see if we can't accommodate that. And we hope to be able to go into the town council with some of those revisions worked out. This just shows a little bit of massing and study on how we had worked to provide a number of different setbacks and massing modulation through the building with the final building and how it responds to some of the context, meaning pedestrian activity along Main Street being brought down to around a double height, two-story level, certain materials being raised to about that two or three-story level, like brick, long-lasting, enduring materials. That would also take its cues from the heights of the townhomes across the street. Don't know what I did there. All right. And then one other note that I'm not sure everybody has seen, but if you were comparing this to, let's say, Gilbert Place, because of the siting of this particular project, we experience about a 14-foot drop-off from Main Street at that point. Am I doing that?
No, I think it's okay. Sorry.
That's no problem. Which means we're 20 to 30 feet, depending on what part of the building, lower than Gilbert Place. So we did provide a couple of in-situ mocked-up renderings to show what these would look like actually from a pedestrian perspective. This one is right across from the roundabout. This one is looking south on Main Street. Also, I think, gives highlight to the fact that the broken up of the breaking of the massing and materials does try to give the appearance of multiple buildings versus one large massive development. There's a lot of summary things here. I would appreciate if I can run through, but I know I'm over time. So any objections, or we should stop?
How about a couple of minutes? Wrap it up in a couple of minutes? That'd be great.
Yes, sir. The existing conditions and town-focused density. The subject of the property sitting vacant or in disrepair have a negative impact on quality of life in the area, as well as preventing approximately, let's say, by right, 135 bedrooms. The problem with that is, if you were trying to develop by right, the improvement of that entire storm would really be out of reach. It would really be a tough thing to accomplish. We are trying to utilize the town zoning as designated in plan. We're trying to create a walkable downtown in a previously undevelopable parcel. And any redevelopment to address this would have the same capital investment in the town's infrastructure. Affordability impact, the proffer at $1.13 million is for the town of Blacksburg. The creating developable real estate where it did not exist previously allows increased supply and creates downward pressure on market rents. Added relief to taxpayers and the elimination of currently $3-plus million investment to the infrastructure to allow the neighborhood renewal. Storm sewer investment in combination with land use efficiency allow greater residential density to be placed in to provide walkable public goods and basic services at a lower cost. The project provides a far greater efficiency of land use to a currently undevelopable site. Additionally, in mitigating flood issues, providing a benefit to overall housing market by mitigating that floodplain, the floodplain expanse impacting multiple parcels, thereby increasing the developable area, the barriers of entry are reduced, creating more housing supply. The sustainable impact, EUI, energy use intensity of 32, is being proposed through our proffer, preventing the creation of 3-plus additional acres of urban heat sink by stacking our parking in a structure versus laying it out on the ground, reducing daily trips fossil fuel and providing multiple convenient alternative transportation resources, including e-bikes and EV charging vehicles, reducing overland flow and particulate runoff from existing conditions as they are currently. There's a lot of vehicles, a lot of equipment being stored on site, and that really just takes all of that into the local watershed. Climate vulnerability, which I found this very interesting, the alignment with the town of Blacksburg's climate vulnerability assessment by increasing storm sewer capacity and minimizing the potential for future town infrastructure vulnerability. Just point out the main portion of that. I mean, we're increasing the system life by 75 years. This would serve for a catalyst for upstream and downstream improvements as those can come online, either with future development or with the town of Blacksburg investment in those storm systems. It set a standard for precedent of infrastructure improvement through private investment if this becomes a reality. And in September 2020, the Adaption and Resilience Strategies recommends offering incentives for just this type of work. There's a number of other benefits here. I will kindly yield the rest of my time. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Just for the record, I thought it was appropriate to let you run a little long because we really do have three separate actions here. So, and there's a lot to talk about. So thank you for that. Moving on, now is time for public comment. If anyone would like to address the Planning Commission regarding this particular public hearing, now would be the opportunity. Please approach the podium. You'll have state your name and address, and please try and keep your comments to 3 minutes.
My name is Pete Macedo. I live at 502 Lee Street in Blacksburg, downtown. I've been a resident property owner for 20 years. Currently, I'm business owner of Blacksburg Bagels, which is at 871 Cambridge Street. It was not in any of the pictures that you saw. All the elevations and things that were up there, I did a count before, I did a count again. There were no pictures of the neighborhood. It shows how it compares to Main Street. It does not show how it compares to the neighborhood. The elevation of this building in comparison to Gilbert Place, maybe shorter, it's about 70 feet taller than my building, which is directly across the street from the all the houses on the other side are at nowhere near the scale of that. The streets are at nowhere near the scale of Main Street. And if you're looking at this from one side, you're going to see something that sort of fits in. If you come to the other side, there's nothing. It bothered me that there was a lot of trees being added to some of those streets, but specifically not to Cambridge Street. That's my street. That's my neighbor's street. And I have a real problem with that because we're almost overtly being ignored with that. My personal concern with this is that I put over $100,000 into the redevelopment of my building, which I do not own. I say my building because I've made it what it is. That money's gone if I can't be there. And if a project of this scale is put across the street from me with the edge at my back, it's a guarantee that all the businesses on my side of Cambridge Street will be so valuable that the property owners would be stupid not to just sell them. If the town's getting 1.13 million for this, and I know what the offers have been to the businesses on my side of the street, which are at least triple what the buildings and the properties and the businesses are worth, it's all gonna be gone. And there's 9 commercial business locations being eliminated by this. And the statement that they're vacant is incorrect, because 6 months ago, all but one were occupied. They had businesses in them. They're gone now because of things like this. And it's setting a really tough precedent to say that the most valuable use of land in town is to let it rot and wait for someone to offer you $1 million more than what it's worth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Members of the commission, my name is Brian Wheeler, and I reside at 509 Stonegate Drive here in Blacksburg. And to be clear, I'm not a NIMBY, and I believe that the area should be developed. But I have 3 primary concerns about the current proposed development in this area. First is the scope of the project. 759 beds is simply too dense for this area. Second is the lack of adequate parking for the project. A 0.5 ratio is simply far too low and unrealistic. And third is the impact on traffic on the area, which I don't believe has been adequately addressed. First, I'd like to address parking at the project. A ratio of 0.5 is simply unrealistic. And I think you can tell that from how the developer spent so much time talking about all these other things that they were going to do about parking. Half the kids at Virginia Tech are wealthy Northern Virginians who are the ones who can afford to live here. They're not taking the bus. They're not getting dropped off by their parents. They're driving down here to go to school. When they get here, even if they have all these other parking options, they're going to first fill up the streets and the free parking. They're going to congest my neighborhood and my street. It's just what's going to happen. Okay. Secondly, the scope of the project is just simply far too large for many reasons. First, with all the recent student housing developments that have been built, it's my understanding that they're having difficulty filling these, that we do not need this much student housing. Second, the development is too dense and will create issues with congestion and traffic. When I look at the traffic study, I think we're considering this 0.5 parking ratio, which is unrealistic. I mean, I live at 509 Stonegate. I go to Main Street all the time, and I stop at the end of Cambridge and Main Street where people can take a left, and I see, and I wait there, because already, because of the edge, students are leaving and trying to get up to Main Street. There is nothing in this traffic study about how these 759 students are going to get from Progress in Cambridge onto Main Street. I mean, I looked at the traffic study. I didn't see any serious proposed changes, and that is going to create congestion and serious issues. Therefore, I would ask the commission to seriously considering reducing the scope of this project, making sure that the parking ratio is adequate, 0.5 simply is not. Something more like 0.8 is more realistic. I understand that Ms. Dosser's development over there by VCOM, she has a 0.5 ratio or something similar. She actually has to rent spaces, is my understanding, from the CRC in order to have adequate development. So I would ask that you require a much higher ratio for parking and make sure that traffic is adequately addressed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Renee Kuhlman. I have the pleasure of living at 500 Stonegate Drive, which is at the intersection of Cambridge and Stonegate. We've lived there for 18 years, and we've seen a lot of change in our neighborhood. I'm very concerned about this particular change that's being proposed to the neighborhood because, as the gentleman spoke, there's a lot of traffic that is already being created by students who don't live in that neighborhood, but who are parking along Cambridge. They're parking along the street which parallels Gilbert Lincus, and they're spilling into the street where I live, Stonegate Drive. So a couple of things that I want to point out that I think is important for you all to consider is, I appreciate that this is improving the infrastructure. I agree that it's great that we would have better stormwater protection. I also think that the main beneficiary of this improvement would be the redeveloped property. So I agree that the stormwater being caught and processed in a different way is great. I'm not exactly sure that that is something that we are going to be the main beneficiaries of. The second thing is that the traffic that is already existing on Main Street, I don't think has been adequately, or the traffic exam, the study of traffic, I don't think has been adequately studied because I feel like it's already hard enough for me to get from Stonegate down to Main Street on that street, and adding 759 extra persons is not going to make that any easier. So I think addressing that is really important. I think part of what I learned when I came to visit the city staff is that this redevelopment that you all are voting on, this rezoning application, is that it has to have a benefit for our community. And I'm not sure that the 100 and, I did the math. If they're offering $1.1 million for affordable housing trust, that equals about $142,000 per floor of this eight-story redevelopment that's going into that. And I think that that is way too low of a figure because for $142,000, what can you really build in terms of affordable housing in this area? So that's my concern is I think it's not a community benefit. I think it's way too low for our affordable housing trust fund. I'm not sure that the sustainability is there either. And I'm very worried about parking. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll be quick. My name is Eric Olson. I live at 1002 Cambridge Street. Lived there for about 15 years now. My parents used that property there. And I think I'm one of the few people in our neighborhood that actually has kids. Gilbert Lincus is right up the road. We've had many instances of kids, especially college kids, driving way too fast, parking way too close to our house, way too close to our neighbors' houses. And I think with this development, it's just going to exacerbate it and make it even worse. Our house is 5 feet from the road. And I've got a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. So it makes me a little nervous to have a huge development come in where more people are going to drive, more people are going to fly down our road, more people are going to park, more people are going to stumble home from nights out, from different apartment complexes. It happens a lot. I've had many college kids in my yard asleep. So I don't like that. I don't think my kids want to see that. I don't think anybody else wants to see that. So that's just kind of what I have to say. Just that different perspective, because I think it's maybe three families in that entire neighborhood right there. So, you know, I just want my kids to be safe. I want everybody else to be safe, whether it's traffic, parking, et cetera. Thank you.
Yeah. Any additional comments? Any additional public comment? Could you state your name again, ma'am?
Shannon.
Shannon.
Flusser.
Thank you.
And the last time I spoke, I said how this town does not need high-density housing at all. It's going to ruin this town. We do not have the capacity to handle a 60-bed, eight-story development. We just don't. We're already at capacity. And if you increase capacity where there's no room for it, what does that bring? I feel like that's only going to bring more of a headache with the traffic, more of a headache with crime, more of a headache with accidents. I mean, I could go on and on, not to mention the fact that eight stories is going to ruin our view, our mountains, our, as I said before, our quaint town. And this is what we have right now, is a quaint town. And I don't want to see it be destroyed. And with the property going in that direction, that would be destroyed. Because once you start with this type of development, it just continues. And I don't think that's ideal. And it's very concerning for me. Very. And I feel like if there's a housing issue, apparently there's not. So why are we even discussing this if there's not a housing issue? But if there's a housing issue for students, then that really needs to be taken up with Tech. It shouldn't be our burden. That's not Blacksburg's to have to deal with. I feel like this is not the right thing. It's lovely. Lovely plan for an urban area. This is a town, and it needs to stay a town and in proper constraints, not massive. That's all. Thank you.
Any additional public comment? Going once, going twice. Okay, we'll move on to applicant rebuttal. Would the applicant like to provide any rebuttal to public comment?
Mm-hmm. Would you like to go back to your presentation?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
One slide that I skipped over that I did want to highlight very quickly is really based around university-adjacent trends and market experience. Some of these are local, some of these are not, some of these are similar-sized towns, most aren't. But what you see from university-adjacent trends and market experience is a consistent drop in parking requirements. The reason for that is to remove more of the vehicles from the town. So you get a reduced parking rate, you have less vehicles coming in. And I heard, you know, a number of the discussion points about vehicles. First was the traffic. There's going to be massive traffic changes. We as an applicant team were not allowed to put our application in until we had gone through a significant study. That study was reviewed, commented, I think at least two times, and it came back with no need for any improvements because there aren't people coming and going all day long. Most of the trips are going to be walkable, they're going to be alternative transportation, and they're going to be either to the downtown services or to the campus itself. And that's why this is an ideal location for this type of density. The other comment that I heard multiple times, I think from almost everyone, is the parking in the neighborhoods. And you know, we are going to do everything we can to minimize our management headaches. So we want to take this to the tenants that are coming in. But one thing I do understand is there is a vehicle for neighborhoods to get permitted parking on their streets, meaning if there's somebody who's parking there that's not supposed to be, they can be towed, they can be fined. And that is, I think, at the ability of this neighborhood, if it is not already enacted. So I'm not certain exactly what the status of that is. In terms of Cambridge, I think this has been something that's been pointed out from this body. This has been something that's been pointed out from the neighboring business owner. I think this is something we truly want to address, and we will be in the process of addressing it, both from a street tree standpoint, a walkability and width of sidewalk standpoint, and ideally, as our design studies go on, a setback standpoint. So we're not looking at a wall that goes straight up 8 feet off the back of the curb. I believe I hit most of those. Thank you again.
Thank you. We've heard public comment, applicant rebuttal. At this point, Kinsey, I'm gonna need some help from you. What I'd like to do is to ask for a motion on the right-of-way request and vote on that motion.
That's correct.
And then I'd like to ask for a motion on the CUP and then vote on the CUP and then the same for the rezoning.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So that being the case, do we have a motion on rezoning 24-2, the companion request to vacate the town-owned alley right-of-way of approximately 2,000 square feet?
Are we going to discuss it, too, or how would that normally happen?
Well, what I'd like to do is I'd like to address the right-of-way request, and we can we can discuss how we proceed. But how I'd like to proceed is to address the right-of-way request, vote on it, redress the CUP, vote on it, and then redress the rezoning. And I believe that the rezoning would require the majority of the discussion. Yes, now, that being the case, we need to understand that, you know, you could be in favor of the right-of-way request, in favor of the CUP, and not in favor of the rezoning or any permutation thereof. These are individual actions under the application. So by voting for the right-of-way request to approve doesn't mean that you're supporting the rezoning. But I do believe the rezoning would and should require the majority of the discussion. If people, if members on the commission would like to proceed in a different way,
makes good sense.
Happy to address that.
Could I just bring a point of, sure. point of clarification or is that council, when we voted on things like this, there's the rezoning, the question, but we've got these little pieces mm-hmm. that we're going to do first, but these little pieces are an important part of that third one. So, if you don't like the rezoning, then you don't vote for the rezoning, but don't back into it by not supporting the smaller pieces. You know, if you're for supporting the big one, mm-hmm. then you then you probably vote for all of these. But if you're against, then it's the proper thing is to vote against all of them.
Yeah, and also that's a function of the motion, because the motion may be a motion to deny.
Can you clarify? I thought I was following you, Jerry, and then at the end.
Yeah, I'm not
like
doing
you said
a good
something
job.
Different.
Yeah, you're right. I probably
because I mean I'm sort of a little bit perplexed by the order, in part because the other two seem.
Let me give an example. That's better than me trying to explain.
Okay.
When we did the Midtown redevelopment, there was the Midtown redevelopment approval.
Okay.
And then there was a transfer of properties because there were some town-owned parcels, so
gotcha.
We would transfer those, and then we got stuff back. It was that. So what we were advised was if you were not in support of the larger thing, don't use that smaller kind of administrative part that's necessary for the big one to go through. Don't use that as a backhanded way to kill the proposal, for lack of a better term. So, you know, these small parts are important to the bigger part. So just be transparent with your intention.
Can I maybe just ask a question if there's another alternate way to do this? And it may be procedurally, it can't be done this way. Can we make the motion make individual motions on all three of these now? Have a discussion on all the project, and then have individual votes after the discussion. That way, it's all being discussed. Is that
connected? So, with you, Kenzie.
That seems reasonable as long as there are three separate actions.
Three separate votes.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm okay with that.
That make more sense to the majority
good.
Of the commission.
Yeah.
All right. So
I just think that I think it's going to be hard to discuss one particular thing mm-hmm. without saying why it fits into something else
yeah.
or doesn't fit into something else.
Agreed. So, who's prepared to make a boatload of motions?
I'll try.
All right.
I move that the Planning Commission recommend approval of the right-of-way proposal 24-2. The conditional use permit 24-3 and the rezoning application 24-2.
Second for each.
So I have a motion and a set. We have three motions and 3 seconds, we'll call it. That being the case, we'll move on to, we have a motion on the dais. Let's have some discussion regarding the motions.
I have a sophomore student at Virginia Tech, and in November I put a $500 deposit down at the Edge because he lives right now out in student storage at Terrace View, and he wants to get rid of his car and move closer in. And even though I put the deposit down in November, he wasn't able to get it. So there are at least, you know, that's a pretty small sample size of one, and granted we're local and he has access to a car if he walks a few miles. But there are students who don't want to have a car. He wound up having to go back out in student storage and have a car again. This is for next year. So there is certainly a demand. I can speak to that personally. And there are certainly students who would prefer not to have a car. And it's hard for me to imagine that many of these students would not simply live farther away. And be someone else's problem if they weren't here. I certainly don't deny that the traffic will increase if you put 750 beds, even if only half of them have cars, in that neighborhood. But I see our responsibility to the town as a whole, and it seems to me that most of those students are likely to live somewhere else. And insofar as if you're not for density, you're for sprawl. And insofar as if there's going to be dense student housing, it ought to be near the university. And insofar as this is in the 18 months, granted that again is not too long, but the 18 months I've been here, this is by far the most comprehensive, complete, thorough, and thoughtful proposal I've seen. I think this is, for me, actually quite a no-brainer.
I'll go next. Just because of some of the citizen comments, which I very appreciate you guys being here to talk to us. I want to just explain some fundamentals of the Planning Commission, which I think get, you know, lost in the details sometimes. As a commission, we are charged with not only thinking about the quality of life of all of you sitting here, but also the quality of life of your children, the quality of life of your children's children, the quality of life of your children's children's children, the quality of life of the people who live in our town after we are all gone. And I think that, you know, it is very hard for people living here now, myself included, to think that far in the future and make decisions for those people that we really don't know. But that's part of what long-range planning is all about. And there are some important parts of our comprehensive plan that think about the long range that are definitely in question here. One of them is housing. One of them is transportation. One of them is environmental sustainability. And all of these things are addressed in this proposal and also by town policies that would interact with this proposal. So I want to point out the parts of this rezoning that, you know, I feel respond to what we have to do to support the future of our town, not only for us, but for many generations to come. Only 5 years ago, we were part of a regional housing study that indicated that the town of Blacksburg was sort of the epicenter of housing shortage in our region. We had a vacancy rate of less than 1%. And when you have a vacancy rate of less than 1%, it's bad news bears for everyone. In the rental environment, it means that each landlord has a long wait list of people who want to live there. And generally what happens when that happens is that instead of landlords competing for renters by providing good management and upgrading their facilities and providing amenities and all of these things, instead the renters are competing for units by accepting lower quality management, lower quality units. They're worried that they can get effectively evicted, you know, if they complain. We have a lot of substandard rental housing in our town. In addition to this new housing that's getting developed, we have, you know, graduate students that endure mold and regular flooding of their units, for example. There's been quite a bit of study going on at Virginia Tech regarding the conditions that graduate students live in, for example. And we need, as a town, to keep on redeveloping over time. And even though over the past 5 years, we've done a great job of approving a ton of housing, and we've started to soften that problem and really gotten ourselves into a more healthy range of vacancy rate. So a healthy range is usually from 3 to 7%, we say. Anytime, you know, a property manager hears me that, you know, 7% would be healthy, you know, their jaw drops. Of course, the individual property managers don't want to see that kind of vacancy rate because they want to have, for sure, lease-ups. For a community perspective, the 2 to 3 to 7% is healthy because it encourages reinvestment in the properties. And so even though we've scooched down into that 3-ish percent or in a healthy place, if we don't continue to develop housing, we will find ourselves back in the 1%. So we can be a little bit pickier now about what we develop in town, but we still have to keep on going or else we're going to get back into that unhealthy range. So I want to be clear that we're not in as much of a housing crisis as we were 5 years ago, but if we don't continue to be proactive, we'll just end up right back there. And then sort of the next issue that I want to discuss is parking. if we want to get away from being a vehicle-oriented community, we have to start somewhere, and that is going to have growing pains. The developer pointed out, but only because we pointed out prior in our work sessions, that one of the town's ways of helping communities deal with those pains is this neighborhood parking permit. And it's, you know, it's not a perfect solution, but it is a transitional solution. We have to change the mindset of our entire town in order to go toward a more multimodal, less vehicle-oriented thing. And we do that redevelopment, by town investment, in multimodal transit. We can't stop our town in time. You know, I know that many people would, you know, there's a joke among planning people that the moment that you moved to the town, it was perfect. And any change from that point on is ruining it. And that's for sure, you know, the perspective of many, many people. But we have to look to the future because we can't just stall time. And we have to accommodate the changes around us or we will have development leapfrog Blacksburg and we'll have masses of commuting into Blacksburg, creating even more parking issues and even more traffic issues. So I think that the lower parking ratio is part of that. And so I am supportive of the lower parking ratio. I agree that the affordable housing contribution is too small, but I haven't stuck on this because the town doesn't really have a policy or set in stone formula for figuring out how much the contribution to an affordable housing fund should be. I think that it's great to have this contribution and that the town will be able to use it to demonstrate what's possible with a housing trust fund, which I also feel is excellent. Redevelopment is very expensive, and I want to acknowledge that the stormwater requirements in our town, which are much higher than many other places in the state and across the country, do an excellent job of protecting the environment, but also create a scenario where it is even more expensive to redevelop. And so as a town, we have to weigh the balance, and if we want these high standards for stormwater and water quality, then we have to accept higher density development to pay for those. And then, let's see. The last thing I wanted to mention is there are a couple of standards that we grappled with the hub when it was redeveloping. And we were talking about how we wanted to promote redevelopment and that student housing, high density student housing, was one of the primary ways to pay for that. And when we wanted to see that very high density redevelopment, that we wanted to see wrapped parking, structured parking that was wrapped by the building, and that we also wanted to see, you know, the streets being activated, and in the hub in particular, we were looking forward to a commercial space there that has remained vacant since it was built. And so I want to acknowledge that this development is doing that structured parking that wraps the parking with the housing, which is a very expensive endeavor, and makes the redevelopment look very nice. And then I also wanted to note that they have a business partner that will ensure that the commercial space is filled from day one, which I appreciate since our prior experience has been that though that commercial space was created upon our request, that it has remained vacant. And so that's just, I'm sorry, I know it's been a little bit long-winded, but this developer has done their homework through and through and has responded to each of our concerns and I think has created a very good project, which they are continuing to commit to improve, which I also appreciate. So that's that.
Any further discussion? Please do. Thank you.
I wanted to say thank you to the development team because, you know, I brought a lot of hard criticism and concerns at that work session in December. You took seriously what was presented to you. You haven't addressed some of my main concerns, but you did address a lot. And also in the past 3 weeks, to be fair, I've done a much deeper dive into parking in America and the pros and cons of that. So a lot of the things that you proposed up front as background completely makes sense to me now because of what I've read. So, you know, as far as the parking issue, you know, I'm drinking the Kool-Aid now. So thank you for that. I do have still the concerns, the fundamental concern of the height and the density of this. Our comp plan has a section on student housing. So this is there, this is where it is, and that's what the North Main study said. So I'm not here to litigate that this isn't a good place, because so much of what you presented is true. And to me, it's just a little too high for our town at this point and the density. Also, I feel if the height came down just a bit, and that would bring the density down, and it would even bring the parking a little more in line. So I'm not going to support it tonight, but I do appreciate all the efforts and the listening, and also some of the things you've presented that maybe you're going to continue to work on as it goes to the next level of review. So that's what I have.
Thank you. Any further discussion?
I'd like to maybe just mention that I too think the developer's been very responsive to the questions that Planning Commission has brought up in previous work sessions. And I'm encouraged that there seems to be some acknowledgement in terms of the setback on Cambridge Street is problematic. I think we brought that up maybe two or three work sessions ago. So we appreciate you working on that before it goes go to council and have the final say. Also, I think it's important to think a little bit about Blacksburg now and in the future, and Blacksburg in the past. Now, looking at the audience, I know there's a couple people here that have been here maybe a little longer than I have been here, but I've been here a long time. And I can tell you that Blacksburg is not the town it was 30 years ago or 40 years ago or 20 years ago. And Blacksburg is not going to be the town 50 years from now than it is now. And I think rather than just kind of trying to take Blacksburg back to a place where it never was, is we need to think about where we want Blacksburg to go. And I think this is the type of project that kind of helps set that vision to where we're going to go, whether we like it or not. It's either going to be higher density development close to the heart of town in Virginia Tech, or it's going to be sprawl. And it's going to be continued loss of farmland in outlying areas if we don't provide a place for people to live here in town, and more commuting time, more commuting distances, more gasoline being burnt. I think this is the type of project we need to look at very seriously, regardless of a reasonable height. And I don't know that this is not a reasonable height. I think setbacks and more urban type considerations are what we really need to be thinking about. If we're going to have higher density development in town, we need to think about what type of infrastructure do we need in town. We need parks to have these people have some open space. So it is an infrastructure question still, but it's a different type of infrastructure now. So that's pretty much what I have to say at this point in time. So thank you for your responsiveness.
Other discussion? Well, we have a motion. And can we do this individually now?
Mm-hmm.
We can, yeah. I would, you know, it's been a long time since I've spoken on the dais about an application. And it's largely because normally I feel like the members of this commission pretty much address how I feel, and I feel they've done that tonight too. You know, I've spent a lot of time walking this site. I feel like I think I can see pretty well in three dimensions. I spent my life as an engineer, and I wanted to really try and feel what this project would feel like on the ground. And I was kind of struck, you know, walking down Cambridge, looking south. What's framed by both sides of the street is the Moss Center. And where we are now and with this town and moving into the future, is this is really, we're at the vanguard of a new urbanism that's gonna occur from the Moss Center down to Progress Street, out into Turner Street. It already has. We've got the Gilbert Place building. We just passed an ordinance that's will hopefully promote some pretty significant density in that Turner Street quadrant. This is where the intensity of development, this is where the density needs to occur so that we have a town left. Because right now, all you got to do is drive the main arterials of this town. There's over 800 residential units being built on Price's Fork right on the border of this town. There's a, you know, you go out Tom's Creek, you go out North Main Street, as soon as you get into the county, you've got residential development. Those people are here, more are coming. We have this roaring economic engine here with Virginia Tech, but it's not just tech, it's the spin-off companies, it's the Torx, it's the all the entities in the corporate research part. People are gonna continue to come to this town. We gotta create opportunities. This is a lot of housing. This is over 700 beds, but we're at a place in our market where any housing is good housing. What will come over time, like it does in many communities like this, is the student housing, both multifamily and single family student housing, will be redeveloped, and it will be redeveloped into the housing that we really need, which is affordable housing, workforce housing, housing for the young professionals, young families. It's not going to happen overnight, but it's not going to happen if we don't have projects like this. This is part of a new urbanism that's going to occur in a very isolated and specific portion of our town, but it's going to have to occur. Do I love it? No, I don't. Do I recognize its inevitability? Yes. Do I feel like it's incumbent upon us to make sure that we do this as well as we can? Yeah. And I've been doing this for almost 15 years, and one thing I've really learned is that projects of this magnitude, the applicant really matters. This applicant is talented. They're experienced. They have a big picture perspective that they brought to this process. They've been responsive, they've been collaborative in their process, and they're going to bring a property management program to this finished product that's going to ensure a well-operated and well-maintained property into the future. Right now, that's about all we can ask for. So I recognize that there will be casualty here. There's going to be young families that are going to be disrupted and disturbed by the development of a project of this scale. Hell, in my last final walk of this site today, I stopped in at Blacksburg Bagels and bought a loaf of bread. And hearing his, you know, personal considerations, it's painful. And he's not alone, and I'm sure that there are many others who could identify similar hardships that they're going to face. But if we don't do this kind of development in this area at this time, our town is going to face hardships of great significance and of a magnitude. We're not going to be able to deliver the important services that we need. We need to have this concentration of development to be able to continue to provide the services that we need to provide and develop in a way that makes sense for the future. So with that, we have a motion, three motions. Let's address and vote on the right-of-way request, which is right-of-way 24-2, the companion request to vacate a town alley. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
All those opposed? Second issue is CUP 24-3, which is an additional companion request to use an alley for access to 22 townhome-style multifamily units. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
All those opposed? And finally, the rezoning request, which is rezoning 24-2, rezoning requests from GC Commercial and R5 Transitional Residential to PR. All those in favor of the motion?
Aye.
All those opposed?
Great.
Thank you. We'll move on now to citizen comment. At this point, you can address the commission on any issue that you may want to discuss. Hearing none, we'll move on to unfinished business. Zoning Ordinance Review Committee, we have not met. Historic or Design Review Board?
The report.
Montgomery County Planning Commission.
Also, actually, I have some things to report regarding that. In last month's meeting, probably the most relevant thing is that they're continuing to chip away at what will be their new master plan or comp plan, rather. And if you have comments, citizens, for the Montgomery County Comprehensive Plan, you'll want to email mcplan@montgomerycountyvirginia.gov. Also, it's probably worth noting, I don't know if you guys have had this experience also, but when you go out there, the view is really quite different. And I think it's the elevation, but it's actually quite intimidating. You know, when you're up here, it feels very comfortable, but when you're out there, it's actually quite intimidating kind of being raised. And so, you know, kudos to you guys who are stepping forward, because it is, you know, being on the other side, I kind of really felt the heft of the kind of geometry of the room.
So. Oh no!
Interesting. Sure. Thank you for that. Any additional items from planning commissioners?
Only that tomorrow we're meeting on the Tom Creek Basin.
Tom Creek Basin Steering Committee has a meeting tomorrow afternoon. That's correct.
Great. Moving on to new business, chair's report. I have none. Planning director's report.
I only have one item. The town clerk has provided you all Virginia Conflict of Interest and Ethics Advisory Council Disclosure of Real Estate Holdings forms. Those are due by February 3rd. I'm happy to take them this evening or at our meeting at our work session. I would encourage you, to get them completed as quick as you can, so we can all get those to the clerk and get that checked off. And if you have any questions, please, I'll be available after the meeting.
Thank you. Town Council report.
We just finished wrapped up today the review of the capital improvement program. And we'll start that process of the hearings and everything. I did want to address something. Council at the end of December heard the applicant presentation for Play Street, which is what we voted for and approved earlier in the month. And so we did that in December, right before the holiday, and then we had another work session today as a follow-up. If you recall, one of the items of that was the affordable housing component with the 9 units, 20%. I and several other members, we had questions and concerns. That was one of my main concerns why I didn't vote for it at the time. Well, we had a really great presentation today by staff that really dug into the roots of financing and how the different programs work and the monies, et cetera, et cetera. I have a PowerPoint I don't have, you know, that I can provide to y'all, but we did get a really great presentation today that explained it. And the bottom line up front is that it appears to be that 20 years for the 9 units is a really good deal.
Yeah.
So, but I will provide that PowerPoint to the members in case they want to peruse it and look at it. It is an interesting report.
Thank you for that. That's great.
My question for the chair. There were some exceptions with the rezonings and others. Should I assume for the record that those have also been approved?
Yes. Yeah. Unless there's any objection. No, that's a good case. Thank you. Thank you for that clarification. And with that, we stand adjourned. Thank you.